from San Diego, California. This is the Frug Life Podcast, the show that teaches you how to save, invest, and earn money. Here's the host, Mr. Frugal himself, Ricky Hirsch.
Welcome to the Frug Life. A coworker of mine recently asked me what he should invest in his 401k, and he wanted me to cover it on the show. And so today I'm going to cover that, but to just preface and disclose it right, I'm just going to talk about what I do and not necessarily what you should do. This doesn't constitute financial advice. It's just me talking about what I do in my 401k. So take that for what it is. And so to get started, what do I do in my 401k? So the first thing I do, though, is I max out my 401k. I put the whole 20% that I'm allowed to put in. I think right now I'm doing 100% Roth 401k. Except I do have an employer match, so the employer match will go into the traditional 401k. I sometimes would do a split between traditional 401k and Roth 401k, and the reason being that it gives you a little bit more flexibility. With the Roth 401k, right, if something were to happen, you can withdraw the principal of that account with no penalties, so you can use it more immediate, which is nice. And you pay all the taxes up front, which is, well, like, kind of not so nice, because I'd rather have tax savings today in some ways. Although it depends on what you think taxes are going to be like in the future. I think I talk about this somewhere else. If you anticipate rates are going to be lower in the future, you probably want to get those tax savings now. And if you think taxes are going to be higher in the future, you probably want to pay the taxes now and not have to pay taxes in the future. By doing both, though, you kind of hedge your bet both ways. Just an idea, though. Anyways, so once that you've actually like started contributing to your 401k plan, you'll have some different options what you can invest in. Now, each 401k is a little different, and so you'll have different options depending on your 401k provider. In general, they should have some similar themes. I've had two different 401ks so far, and then my wife has had, you know, a 403b and whatnot. And so one of the options you might have is called a target date fund. Now, the target date fund works pretty simply. In essence, you pick the time frame, the target date that you plan to retire in. And over time, it gradually shifts the allocation of stocks and bonds and whatnot in that portfolio to match your retirement horizon. In essence, it is a one-stop shop. You can buy this target date fund and then be done. And you have a pretty well-diversified portfolio and one that even shifts as you age. And the theory there being that as you get older, you want to move away from equities and more into stocks. Now, I'm not saying if that's a good idea or a bad idea. It is an idea. And if you are going to just buy one single thing, I think there's worse things you could buy than a target date fund. Ramit Sethi, you know, the I Will Teach You to Be Rich guy, really likes them because it is kind of one of the things you can just kind of set it and kind of forget it for the most part. Just let it do its thing. You'll also have other options, kind of like probably some S&P 500 index to follow. You may have some active funds that you can use. And then you'll maybe have a mix of other things, like maybe there's a REIT option, a real estate investment trust, so you can get some alternative exposure to not just the stock market. You'll probably have some international fund of sorts to check out. And probably some fixed income funds as well, maybe a bond fund. Your plan may be different, but those are generally some options you might expect. And so what do I do? Me, personally, I think I have a decent amount in my target date fund. In essence, my portfolio theory is pretty straightforward. I want to have kind of a broad base, a well-diversified base that I start with, have some S&P 500 exposure, have some smaller cap exposure. And basically, once I have a base, a well-diversified base, I like incrementally add other things. So on top of the U.S. stock focus, right, I have maybe 10 to 20% in international stocks, and then another 10 to 20% in REITs and non-stock exposure type stuff. I have a very small bond allocation, maybe 5%, mostly because I'm young and bonds don't return very well usually, although right now is a bit of an exception, so maybe I do want to increase my bond exposure. I don't like bond funds that much, though, because the funds are like forced to buy and sell bonds as people enter and exit the bond fund. And really, I'd rather hold bonds to maturity, because as you enter and exit bonds quickly, you can have some losses as you exit in unfavorable conditions. Whereas I really just want to hold bonds to maturity and get that set yield. So some people also will talk ill of international stocks and saying they haven't performed well and that the US is the best market. And, you know, I think that is kind of a narrow focus. Yeah, I think in general, international hasn't done well as the US. But, you know, I'm not sure that's a trend that's going to continue forever. If you think about the stock market in Japan, right, the stock market in Japan has been stagnant the last 30 years. There has not been much like price appreciation in Japanese stocks in 30 whole years. The highest the Japanese market had like peaks in the 90s that haven't been beaten, which is a crazy thing to think about. And so when you think about how the stock market in the US will do, will it always perform as well as it has historically? And I think the answer to that is probably not. It depends what happens in the future. I think we see some concerning trends regarding population growth in the United States. People are having less children, and with less population, GDP, overall GDP, not GDP per capita, but overall GDP will decrease if the population decreases, which is exactly what we've seen happen in Japan. We've seen the population shrink, and we've seen GDP in Japan shrink. Not GDP per capita. The GDP per capita in Japan, I think, has been fine. It has been keeping up with the US GDP per capita. But with a shrinking population, the GDP of Japan has shrunk, and in turn, their stock markets have not done well. And we see in other countries, birth rates across the board are kind of decreasing. Birth rates in Europe, I think, are lower than they were. And so I think we may be coming up on a time when stock markets in highly developed countries may not perform as well, just an idea. And I think one way you can potentially hedge that, though, is by having some international exposure. Have some stocks in countries where the birth rate is high. Maybe those international exposures aren't going to do the best in times when highly developed markets do very well. But in times when highly developed markets aren't doing well, your international exposure may help you. Just an idea. Again, not investment advice, just something to consider, though, which is something I do consider. The other thing I consider, too, is small caps, not ultra small caps, but I do like to diversify and not just get the S&P 500. You'll notice in recent times, the S&P 500, even the S&P 500, actually, most of the return recently in the S&P 500 has been through just a handful of stocks. And the majority of stocks in the S&P 500 actually haven't kept up with the index, which is a very interesting phenomenon. And again, caused by just a handful of the stocks, causing most of the return of the index. And likewise, as you go smaller, and those stocks were the larger stocks within the S&P 500. So if you go smaller and you look at smaller cap stocks, in very recent times, they haven't performed very well. So another question is this always going to be the case? And I think the answer probably is no, right? At some point, the returns of small cap and larger cap and ultra large cap stocks, they're going to kind of like come back together. There's going to be a reconvergence, I think. I mean, at least at some point in the future, I think it's somewhat inevitable, right? If you look at a large enough time horizon, any prediction is going to come true over time, right? I guess no guarantees. We'll see. But anyways, the idea I'm touting here is a bit of a reversion to the mean, that eventually small cap stocks are going to have solid returns again, which is why I have some of my exposure in small cap stocks. And again, not all of my exposure is in small cap stocks. Not all of my exposure is in international stocks. The last thing to talk about is REITs, I guess, for a second, which it's nice to have something that isn't stock market focused. REITs, you know, go out there, buy real estate, rent out the real estate, and collect that money and then remit it to you in the form of dividends, usually. Or I guess they could just remit it to you in price appreciation of the REIT as they use that money to go and buy more real estate. Doesn't really matter. But I think it's nice to have something that isn't directly related to the stock market. More diversity in general, I think, is better. And then lastly, as I mentioned before, I do have a little bit of fixed income allocation. Not very much, almost negligible. I guess the last thing I should mention too, which I probably should have mentioned at the beginning, is you should look at all of your assets kind of holistically, right? Don't just think about what's in your 401k, think also what's in your IRA, think about other investments you hold outside of those, think about if you have cryptocurrency holding. You kind of want to consider everything holistically and not just look at each account as a silo. Granted, I sometimes do that myself just out of practicality, because it's easier to just look at one account and make sure it's well diversified. And then if you have many individual accounts, they're all well diversified. You know, in aggregate, you're probably well diversified. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back. I think there's a few things I wanted to talk about. One thing, I talk about international stocks in the last segment, and in some ways I'm kind of mixing international and emerging markets together, because I talk a lot about the benefits of emerging markets when I talk about international stocks. That said, most international exposure is going to have some emerging market exposure, and you may or may not have emerging market exposure that you can get by itself. So just consider that. There's also one more term you can throw in there, and that's frontier markets. And so frontier markets are kind of like even newer, less mature markets than emerging markets. I think these terms are a little bit loose, though. What's the difference between a frontier market and an emerging market? I mean, there's not like a fine line between those two. But the general idea is that it's even like a less developed market than an emerging market. You might consider exposures in those, although maybe you do want to avoid frontier markets and focus on slightly more mature emerging markets. That's a whole nother topic. The other thing I wanted to point out too is I talk about looking at your portfolio holistically, and as you do so, you might consider which accounts are more tax advantaged than others, right? And you may choose to allocate your investments in a way that takes advantage of the tax properties of each account. And by that I mean, if you are going to do dividend investing, you probably want to do so in a tax-advantaged account, because then you don't have to pay the taxes on the dividends either right away or ever. Whereas if you are focused on a growth strategy, right, where you anticipate your stocks will appreciate in value, it's less important to have that in a tax-advantaged account, because you don't immediately pay taxes on that growth, right? It's only when you realize those capital gains that you have to pay tax on them. And then likewise, if you do invest in fixed income or bonds, right, having those in a tax-preferred account, assuming they are not like municipal bonds or some other tax-advantaged bond, you probably want those in a tax-advantaged account, because bond income, that interest income, is often going to be taxed as ordinary income. So keep that in mind. Think about the vehicle you're using for investment, and think about how you are matching it with the investments you put within it. All right. Well, if you have a question or something you want discussed on the show, feel free to reach out and I will try to make it happen for you. I have an episode of Ricky Rambles I released recently that's talking a little bit about why the show is a little less frequent. Feel free to check that out. I will try to include a link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to today's episode. And as always, stay frugal.